Thank you very much, Roger Badish. Matt Pabala here with you, everybody. 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up late with us. Started at our new time today of 1 a.m. We'll be here until 5 a.m. when Orion is along with the morning show. Well, you probably spent much of this week reading or thinking about the crisis we had at the southern border as it became more and more in the news that families were being separated at the border, families who came in and we started hearing, well, this has always been the law and this has happened before. And so we want to get just a level-headed figuring out a step back from this, because there is a lot of vitriol going on as it's being talked about on both sides. People very upset that Trump is being given a hard time about this. People very upset, of course, that families are being separated and who is to blame. There's just a lot going around about what's going on. And I found on Twitter a gentleman named Mitchell Eppner, somebody retweeted a tweet of his, and he had this long thread about the history of this, because he's a former assistant U.S. attorney who's dealt with a lot of this. And so we invited him on the show to talk a little bit about exactly what is going on and what suddenly changed that we suddenly have this crisis going on. Mitch, this is Matt Pabala. You're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. So good to be on with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Explain to me what your former role was. How come you have such a vast knowledge about what's going on in this situation?
So from 2001 through 2004, I was a federal prosecutor and assistant United States attorney in the District of New Jersey. And we had I in particular had a large immigration docket. So I've been dealing with this stuff for almost 20 years.
Now, in New Jersey, why would you have a large immigration docket dealing with stuff like this?
Well, there's a large immigrant community, and Newark International Airport is one of, like O'Hare, it's one of the big international airports. You have, it's a huge port of entry, so you're dealing with immigration issues all the time.
Okay. In 2014, you wrote about the child immigration crisis. And has much changed since then, except for that we started categorizing people seeking asylum differently?
Well, what's changed since 2014 was really in the last 4 months when Donald Trump and his administration decided that they were going to go to what they call a zero tolerance policy. And they're prosecuting everybody who crosses someplace other than a port of entry, meaning an airport or one of the designated land entry places, for the misdemeanor of illegal entry into the United States. And that decision was done with the intended effect of making life as miserable as possible for any family that came in seeking asylum.
So the idea was, it's kind of a nuclear option, right? That this would, you know, if you knew that if you showed up at the border and tried to cross and were caught, that your family would be separated, that would be seen as a very big deterrent, that hopefully this would stop people from en masse just showing up at our borders or trying to sneak through.
Well, yes, and it's been in two parts. One is that they've decreased the number of people who are actually processed if they seek asylum at a port of entry. They've reduced the number of man hours that are being devoted to that, which means that people are being backed up at places like McAllen, Texas, for weeks on the Mexican side of the border. And then if a person or a family tries to cross not going through the designated port of entry, when they get apprehended, the adults get criminally prosecuted for the misdemeanor of illegal entry, which means that automatically, because we don't put kids in jail, once somebody's criminally charged, they get put in some form of detention, and the kids get separated. And they did this on purpose, as you said, as a deterrent in order to try to stop the flow of asylum seekers from Central America.
So the Trump administration has been able to argue this is a law, and when they're saying it's the Democrats' fault, what they're trying to sort of parse is that back in 1997 we passed this law that if you're being prosecuted, right, isn't that where it comes from, that when we prosecute, we don't keep kids in jail, and so that's where the separation comes from. The big change here is that they're prosecuting all of these, whereas that wasn't, while that may have been the law, if we chose to prosecute, we weren't choosing to prosecute in the past, right?
Well, yes, and the end is that previously prosecution was reserved for people who were reentering after prior deportation, with an emphasis on people who were reentering after prior deportation for aggravated felony, and that's what I think everybody thought should be going on. If you have, for example, since the president is focused on MS-13, I actually prosecuted MS-13 members, and they get convicted of some, an MS-13 member gets convicted of some violent crime, goes back to El Salvador, and then tries to enter a second time. Those are the people who should be under prior policy during the Bush administration, which was when I was working as a federal prosecutor, during the Obama administration, during the first Bush administration, during the Clinton administration. The idea was those are the people who should be criminally prosecuted, and if those people happened to be entering with children, those children would not be thrown into jail, but they would be separately detained until they could be placed into an appropriate facility. That would be thousands of people a year. We're talking now about 300,000 people a year being prosecuted for the misdemeanor of illegal entry with no prior record, and thousands upon thousands of children who are being ripped away from their families with literally no prior planning for how the families are going to be informed where their children are or where the children will be kept. So the only purpose of this, as far as anybody can tell, was the deterrent that you were talking about. We're going to treat children so horribly that people in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras will say, we can't come to the United States, even if we're seeking asylum.
And I guess looking at it on the other side, it could be argued that it had gotten so lax the other way that something needed to be done. You wrote in an article that I have here from 2014 titled What Triggered the Child Immigration Crisis, that when people were coming and the children then would be placed generally with family members who are already here, it would take so long to go through their immigration hearings and stuff that often they'd be in the U.S. for a few years before they ever really started going through the process. In the meantime, going to public school and kind of assimilating to America, right?
Well, yes. And that was a policy that was created during the George W. Bush administration of what do we do when unaccompanied minors show up on the border and get apprehended crossing or show up at a port of entry claiming asylum. And when the policy was created, the expectation was it would be a couple of hundred kids a year, and it was a very humane policy. And then in the Obama administration, you started having tens of thousands of kids who were being sent by their families, either on their own or more frequently to rejoin family members that had previously come into the country. And it created a crisis because it overwhelmed the system. And there was a need for a bipartisan solution. No bipartisan solution was created. The Obama administration adopted somewhat more punitive measures in order to try to stop the flow of kids, because you had thousands of kids traveling on their own at very young ages through Mexico, and horrible things were happening to them.
And what kind of punitive measures did the Obama administration enact, and did it work?
Well, what they did was they started processing kids very, very quickly at the border. and turning them around in within 72 hours in the way that had previously been done only for kids from Mexico and Canada, because the decision was made that if you treated those kids as if they the only reason they would be there is if they had a well-grounded fear and were appropriate asylum seekers, you would just have this overwhelming flow of people. So it wasn't punitive in holding them indefinitely in detention, but it was this very summary process where most of these kids were being turned around within 72 hours.
So since the Trump administration had decided the flow had gotten too much, and had the flow grown really large again, is there a kind of an immigration crisis where so many people are showing up at the borders right now?
No, that's the irony. During at the beginning of the Obama administration, we were looking at roughly 2.5 to 3 million people who were being apprehended crossing the border each year. That number went down fairly dramatically during the Obama administration, continued to go down in the Trump administration. It's down to about 10% of that. It's down to about 300,000. This is something that's been done in order to create a crisis. This was not a crisis beforehand.
Okay, so on the one hand, it's the administration decided this is, I'm calling it a nuclear option just because it's blown up into such a big thing, that this would deter people if they know that they're going to be separated from their families and don't know when or how they'll be back together and their kids will be all on their own. They'll be so horrified at that idea they won't show up and try to legally cross our border. The other question is, did President Trump also do it just to try to force the issue, not just to encourage people not to do this, but also because of what was going to, I mean, did they foresee how this was going to blow up? And so he could then push, okay, well, let's change this and let's fund the wall.
Well, what I've read, and this is the first time we're sort of going from a place where I feel very comfortable that I have expertise to I'm just reading the same thing you're reading. But what I've been reading is that this was a political calculation that wasn't about let's fund the wall. It was about let's make our base really want to show up to vote in November. Because if we turn this into the next version of us versus them with the NFL players and the national anthem, and that was the comparison that I understand he was making to people, that this was a way to change the topic from things he didn't want to be talking about to something that he thought would electorally benefit him.
Well, that's interesting, and that is something he certainly ran hard on, the wall and immigration and all of those things, and so President Bush has been very vocal about that. I need to take a quick break. Can you hang on for a little bit more, Mitchell? Can you talk to us for a while?
Absolutely.
Because I want to talk more about the article that you wrote previously. I want to go through what you wrote on Twitter about what's going on right now, but also about how some of our past policies may have caused some of the problems that we're having right now, that we've sort of maybe made a circular motion here on sending people back, which maybe is causing more people to come back. You talk about the gang culture that has been brought from America and deported back to other countries and how that might be driving other people back to us. It's a very complex issue. It's not an easy one. Mitchell Eppner is with us. He's a former assistant U.S. attorney, and he has dealt with a lot of these immigration issues and written some really interesting things to try and clarify things for us so we can all step back, take a look at what's going on, and talk about it rationally. 720 WGN earlier this week on Twitter. It's a bunch of little tweets giving the kind of history of what we've got going on. He wrote, "I prosecuted many people for the felony of illegal re-entry after prior deportation for aggravated felony. This was a priority in the George W. Bush administration," as he told us. "The idea was that if a person was previously deported for an aggravated felony, they should be criminally prosecuted and spend about 5 years in jail if they re-entered. An aggravated felony under the immigration law is defined in 8 U.S.C. 1101A43 with subsections A through U. In broad brush, these are violent crimes, weapons, weapons offenses, frauds. The reason that illegal entry and illegal re-entry were rarely prosecuted is that the number of criminal prosecutions required would quickly outstrip the prosecutorial and judicial resources to handle them. The current average is that about 300,000 people are apprehended each year crossing the border away from official ports of entry. In 2016, there were only 73,000 people prosecuted for all crimes by the U.S. Department of Justice in all federal courts nationwide, turning each illegal entry and illegal reentry case we weren't choosing to prosecute in the past, right?
Well, yes, and the end is that previously prosecution was reserved for people who were reentering after prior deportation, with an emphasis on people who were reentering after prior deportation for aggravated felony. And that's what I think everybody thought should be going on. If you have, for example, since the president is focused on MS-13, I actually prosecuted MS-13 members, and they get convicted of some, an MS-13 member gets convicted of some violent crime, goes back to El Salvador, and then tries to enter a second time. Those are the people who should be under prior policy during the Bush administration, which was when I was working as a federal prosecutor, during the Obama administration, during the first Bush administration, during the Clinton administration. The idea was those are the people who should be criminally prosecuted. And if those people happened to be entering with children, those children would not be thrown into jail, but they would be separately detained until they could be placed into an appropriate facility. That would be thousands of people a year. We're talking now about 300,000 people a year being prosecuted for the misdemeanor of illegal entry with no prior record, and thousands upon thousands of children who are being ripped away from their families with literally no prior planning for how the families are going to be informed where their children are or where the children will be kept. So the only purpose of this, as far as anybody can tell, was the deterrent that you were talking about. We're going to treat children so horribly that people in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras will say, we can't come to the United States, even if we're seeking asylum.
And I guess looking at it on the other side, it could be argued that it had gotten so lax the other way that something needed to be done. You wrote in an article that I have here from 2014 titled What Triggered the Child Immigration Crisis, that when people were coming and the children then would be placed generally with family members who are already here, it would take so long to go through their immigration hearings and stuff that often they'd be in the U.S. for a few years before they ever really started going through the process. In the meantime, going to public school and kind of assimilating to America, right?
Well, yes. And that was a policy that was created during the George W. Bush administration of what do we do when unaccompanied minors show up on the border and get apprehended crossing or show up at a port of entry claiming asylum. And when the policy was created, the expectation was it would be a couple of hundred kids a year, and it was a very humane policy. And then in the Obama administration, you started having tens of thousands of kids who were being sent by their families, either on their own or more frequently to rejoin family members that had previously come into the country. And it created a crisis because it overwhelmed the system. And there was a need for a bipartisan solution. No bipartisan solution was created. The Obama administration adopted somewhat more punitive measures in order to try to stop the flow of kids, because you had thousands of kids traveling on their own at very young ages through Mexico, and horrible things were happening to them.
And what kind of punitive measures did the Obama administration enact, and did it work?
Well, what they did was they started processing kids very, very quickly at the border, and turning them around in within 72 hours, in the way that had previously been done only for kids from Mexico and Canada, because the decision was made that if you treated those kids as if the only reason they would be there is if they had a well-grounded fear and were appropriate asylum seekers, you would just have this overwhelming flow of people. So it wasn't punitive in holding them indefinitely in detention, but it was this very summary process where most of these kids were being turned around within 72 hours.
So since the Trump administration had decided the flow had gotten too much, and had the flow grown really large again, is there a kind of an immigration crisis where so many people are showing up at the borders right now?
No, that's the irony. At the beginning of the Obama administration, we were looking at roughly 2.5 to 3 million people who were being apprehended crossing the border each year. That number went down fairly dramatically during the Obama administration, continued to go down in the Trump administration. It's down to about 10% of that. It's down to about 300,000. This is something that's been done in order to create a crisis. This was not a crisis beforehand.
Okay, so on the one hand, it's the administration decided this is, I'm calling it a nuclear option just because it's blown up into such a big thing that this would deter people if they know that they're going to be separated from their families and don't know when or how they'll be back together and their kids will be all on their own. They'll be so horrified at that idea they won't show up and try to legally cross our border. The other question is, did President Trump also do it just to try to force the issue, not just to encourage people not to do this, but also because of what was going to, I mean, did they foresee how this was going to blow up? And so he could then push, okay, well, let's change this and let's fund the wall.
Well, what I've read, and this is the first time we're sort of going from a place where I feel very comfortable that I have expertise to I'm just reading the same thing you're reading. But what I've been reading is that this was a political calculation that wasn't about let's fund the wall. It was about let's make our base really want to show up to vote in November. Because if we turn this into the next version of us versus them with the NFL players in the national anthem, and that was the comparison that I understand he was making to people, that this was a way to change the topic from things he didn't want to be talking about to something that he thought would electorally benefit him.
Well, that's interesting, and that is something he certainly ran hard on, the wall and immigration and all of those things, and so President Bush has been very vocal about that. I need to take a quick break. Can you hang on for a little bit more, Mitchell? Can you talk to us for a while?
Absolutely.
Because I want to talk more about the article that you wrote previously. I want to go through what you wrote on Twitter about what's going on right now, but also about how some of our past policies may have caused some of the problems that we're having right now, that we've sort of maybe made a circular motion here on sending people back, which maybe is causing more people to come back. You talk about the gang culture that has been brought from America and deported back to other countries and how that might be driving other people back to us. It's a very complex issue. It's not an easy one. Mitchell Eppner is with us. He's a former assistant U.S. attorney, and he has dealt with a lot of these immigration issues and written some really interesting things to try and clarify things for us so we can all step back, take a look at what's going on, and talk about it rationally. 720 WGN. More with Mitchell Eppner after we get a quick check of the news from the thread that he sent out earlier this week on Twitter. It's a bunch of little tweets giving the kind of history of what we've got going on. He wrote, "I prosecuted many people for the felony of illegal re-entry after prior deportation for aggravated felony. This was a priority in the George W. Bush administration," as he told us. "The idea was that if a person was previously deported for an aggravated felony, they should be criminally prosecuted and spend about 5 years in jail if they re-entered. An aggravated felony under the immigration law is defined in 8 U.S.C. 1101A43 with subsections A through U. In broad brush, these are violent crimes, weapons, weapons offenses, frauds. The reason that illegal entry and illegal re-entry were rarely prosecuted is that the number of criminal prosecutions required would quickly outstrip the prosecutorial and judicial resources to handle them. The current average is that about 300,000 people are apprehended each year crossing the border away from official ports of entry. In 2016, there were only 73,000 people prosecuted for all crimes by the U.S. Department of Justice in all federal courts nationwide, turning each illegal entry and illegal reentry case into a federal criminal prosecution would increase the number of federal criminal prosecutions by four times, from 70,000 to 370,000 people. The courts could not even handle guilty pleas and sentencing for that many people. When people arrive at a U.S. port of entry, they can apply for asylum. If a person applies for asylum, U.S. law requires that be allowed into the country, although they can be detained while the asylum application is considered. And it goes on. And it's very interesting to see how we got here. Now, President Trump decided to shake things up and really outraged a lot of America. But he's forced the issue. So now we got to figure out what do we do and what can they come together to get done. Besides separating people, which now is going to stop, but the damage was done for a lot of people, and this is not going to go away. And I don't think he would hesitate to do it again if he felt he needed to, or felt it would be the, you know, in his mind, the right thing to do. So what do they do next? We'll talk more with Mitchell Eppner about that after we check the news. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Let's check the news now with Roger Battish. 720 WGN, Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. Orion will be along with the morning show. At that time, we're speaking with Mitchell Eppner, a former assistant U.S. attorney who prosecuted a lot of cases, immigration cases in New Jersey, and knows a lot about what's going on at our southern border. Thank you very much for holding on for all of that time, Mitchell. We appreciate you staying on with us for this long and into the morning. Let me find the phone pod. New board here. I'm sorry. I'm learning where all my buttons are, Mitch. Sorry about that. I was reading as we went into the news of some of the thread of the tweet that you sent out earlier this week, kind of explaining what's going on, and that historically you wrote the only time a family unit would be broken up would be the case of a criminal prosecution. If an alien is criminally prosecuted, she is either held in prison without bail or held in criminal alien status with bail. Even on bail, they are basically in jail. In either case, kids are not put in jail or criminal alien lockup. The current administration has changed policy to require that every alien who is apprehended after making a border crossing away from a port of entry is criminally prosecuted, contrary to all prior precedent, and that will quickly overwhelm the federal courts, leaving no room for any other criminal prosecution or civil case. So when the Trump administration decided to do this way, do you think that they had thought that out, that we can do this for a short amount of time, but if we try to make this our policy long term, where they know that they would overwhelm the court? So did he do this just for the short term effect of driving this national discussion on this?
I've seen no evidence that they gave any thought to how long they could do this and how quickly it would take all resources away. Yesterday, there was a memo that was released from the San Diego region, where basically the DEA and the U.S. Attorney's Office there said, we can't do any criminal prosecutions of drug importation because everything has been diverted in order to deal with misdemeanor illegal entry cases.
So that could mean that drug kingpins or drug smugglers or people like that are going to get away with things more than they would have.
Yes, and there won't be the resources to do investigatory work. There won't be the resources to do prosecutorial work. The federal government, as big and powerful as it is, has to make choices. And every time you choose to do one thing, you're choosing not to do another thing. When, as you read out before, when you're talking about prosecuting 300,000 people a year for a misdemeanor, it's quadrupling the amount of prosecutions. We have 70,000 or so federal prosecutions a year. Most of those are felonies. You're going to lose all of your felony prosecutions in order to prosecute misdemeanors.
I would imagine, though, that the administration would argue that's the numbers as you see them, but what we see is that this will greatly decrease the number of people crossing. As long as we keep doing this, those numbers will go way down, and we will be able to handle the prosecutions we have to make.
Well, they may say that. there is zero evidence that the number of crossings can go down or will go down below where they are right now. They are at a 30-year low, and there's the problems, and you were talking about this beforehand, the problems that are driving people up from places like Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, they're going to continue. They're getting, if anything, worse. So this isn't a question of what we're attracting. This is a question of what's being boiled up from troubled areas below us. And if things are miserable enough down there, no matter what's happening here, there's going to be a continued flood.
So, the reason that we're at a low right now, as you said in one of the articles, I believe, or in your tweets, that things have actually gotten better in some areas in the Honduras and other areas that were bad a few years ago. That's why the numbers were so high.
Yes, absolutely. There was a late Obama administration. There was a lot of work that was done in order to try to relieve the pressure that was creating this flow into the United States.
And what was that? What was done? More aid to some of those countries to help stem violence down there?
More focusing on trying to save civil society that had been attacked by MS-13 and other gangs. And as you were saying before, it had become a vicious cycle. You had violent gangs, largely of El Salvadorians, that were preying on people in the United States, including the immigrant community. They would be convicted. The kingpins would be sent back. When they went back, they didn't become bankers and lawyers. They were criminals down there. They just were attacking a very failed state in these countries, and they were making things even more miserable down there, which sent more refugees and asylum seekers up here.
So it's a catch-22. We get them up here, they commit crimes, we send them back, they start committing crimes down there, which causes other people to say, we've got to get out of here and go seek asylum. There's been concern that, in President Trump used this in a tweet this week, people knowing a password to get into the country, people claiming asylum. And I believe there was a court ruling because somebody, and correct me if I have this wrong, but I thought I read something about somebody seeking asylum because of her husband, and that her husband was going to track her down, and so she was seeking asylum. And generally, it had always been seeking asylum from a government or crime in a country or a city or nation. This was a personal asylum request. And if we start considering everything like that, it could become very easy for people to just say, oh, I'm seeking asylum, and then trying to get into the U.S. that way.
Well, the asylum process is a multi-level, multi-year process, and there are very few things that are magic words, and abuse from a husband is something that can be taken into consideration, but it is far from being magic words. There is, I'm sort of, you let me know how much further you want me to go in being explicit about that.
Sure.
There are practices in East Africa with how women are treated that if there is physical evidence of that sort of butchery going on, is the one thing that is almost an automatic asylum status at this point.
I guess the question becomes, when you seek asylum, it's not a simple process, it takes years. But where do people seeking asylum spend those years while their case is being processed and researched and thought about?
Often they are on immigration bail. So they are in a community. They have to be gainfully employed. If they're not gainfully employed, they cannot receive public assistance. They are forced to leave immediately, and they have to be checking in for periodic status hearings and so forth. But by and large, people who are seeking asylum are not jailed during that period of time.
So you could see where the Trump administration would say that is a code word. If you say asylum, now you've got 2 years here as long as you're employed and you're living in America, which is what you wanted in the first place. So while you could say, well, it's not a real problem, not that many people are coming, this is being overblown, whatever the number is that President Trump or his administration thinks is too much, they're saying that this is something that needs to be changed. I imagine we would say if the numbers are small, it's not something that needs to be changed. But, you know, I guess I don't know. Should that be something that's rethought of how asylum is processed and if people get to stay while their asylum is being processed?
Well, you know, asylum is something that has been a hallmark of America ever since the horror shows of what happened during the 1930s when, you know, the St. Louis was turned around and you had thousands of Jews who ended up being slaughtered in the Holocaust. Nothing is perfect. The question is, which problems do you want to live with and what blood do you want to have on your hands? And the asylum process is a funnel. So if somebody gets all the way through it, it's a 2-year process. About half of the people are sent away within the first 3 months. So it's not that if you say the word asylum, you're automatically here for 2 years. It's a process where most people are eliminated, well under half, depends from year to year, but between roughly 10 and 25%, actually are granted asylum. And that's something that America's been proud of in the past.
When the people are turned around or sent back, half of them, I guess the other question would be, how many, once they get in, get lost in the system or just escape the system and stay in America?
Well, that's a really good question. And that was one of the things that the Obama administration worked hard to improve. There was a time when there was roughly a 30% 30% group that was being lost in the system. By the end of the Obama administration, the numbers were well over 90% of people who were showing up for all of their hearings and not getting lost in their system, and in some places above 95%. Again, it's going to be, nothing is going to be perfect. Which problems are we willing to live with, and which things do we say, you know, are so awful that we will not do them? And there is a lot that's been going on in the last 3 months that's so awful that millions of people are saying we can't do them and still be America.
Well, when it comes to this one, I know different data is out saying so many people approve or disapprove of what's going on here. I think everybody was pretty shocked by what they were seeing and hearing about. And it finally spurned President Trump to act and maybe to actually give in for once, to not be able to pass legislation that funded his border wall before he stopped the separation of families. He did act on that. The damage has already been done, a lot of people would say, with so many kids separated, so many kids that might not find their parents again. I was reading stories tonight about kids that have already been adopted or gone through a process of adoption who may, you know, I don't know how they're going to be reunited with their parents. We've also seen some kids reunited with their parents. So we'll see what happens with all of that. Who is to blame? I know that you would say, of course, that this week the administration is to blame because they acted this way and took this step to push this issue and stop border crossings at any and all costs. When you look back at how we got here, I mean, we would everybody agree immigration reform needs to happen? They need to figure things out, not just because of this week, but because of the way the process is handled? Or would you have said before this week, the system may be flawed, but it actually works well enough that it's serving people and it's serving America's interests?
I know nobody who's involved in the immigration system who thinks it's been working well. We have well over 10 million undocumented people in America. We have big problems, and people have been talking about comprehensive immigration reform for at least 12 years. There was a bill that almost made its way through Congress under George W. Bush. There were plans that made it through the House but not the Senate under President Obama. The question isn't, do we need to fix things? The question is, what do people think is broken, and what do people think needs to be preserved? In my view, the idea of prosecuting every illegal entry and prioritizing misdemeanor prosecutions over felony prosecutions and separating families, that as a form of deterrence, that is adding to the problems, not fixing them.
Well, you would think that everybody would agree we don't want families separated, we don't want to destroy families, but people would also say they don't want people sneaking into the United States. We don't want people to be here illegally in general, because that's just against the law, and we shouldn't allow that, right? So what, as somebody who's worked in this pretty closely, are there any things that you would like to see done that you would say this is what they could do? I mean, should a wall be built? Should there be some way taken to prevent the illegal and very dangerous border crossings that happen all the time? Or should we relax on that a little bit and understand that that's going to happen? Or should we try to build more ports of entry so that people have a place to try to cross safely and humanely? What are we doing wrong, and what could we do better?
So you ask a lot of very good questions there. Number one, I think that expanding the manpower at our ports of entry so that people can be processed and we can actually try to apply our laws and let people who present with a credible claim for asylum come into the program, and let people who do not have a credible claim for asylum, or like most immigrants, don't claim asylum at all, will not be granted entry. So that's something where I feel I have some expertise. On the question of whether or not a border wall would be effective, that's a policy question. I have my own opinion, which is I think it will actually be counterproductive, because the infrastructure that you would need to build in order to create the wall would attract people and give them easier ways to get to the rest of America if they get across the wall, because right now the biggest barrier is not the physical line between the United States and Mexico. It's that you've got dozens and sometimes hundreds of miles of nothing if you actually cross in the mountains. If there were access roads in order to build the wall, you're going to have access roads that the immigration smugglers can use in order to take people away after they've climbed over the wall. The one thing that is certain is that if you build a wall and you do not have it manned with literally hundreds of thousands of people, it will not keep people out. The wall itself would be absolutely ineffective without large numbers of people manning it. And how much are we willing to spend on that? And what are we willing to do? It's a question of priorities.
I have a silly question, but if I want to go to Mexico, I show my passport, they let me into Mexico. If a Mexican citizen had a passport, couldn't they just enter the U.S. and then decide if they wanted to stay and evade the system?
Absolutely.
So why do so many people cross illegally? Because they don't have passports, or because they're not actually Mexican, they're from another country altogether?
That you've put your finger on it. We do not have the same sort of reciprocity with El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala. So that's a large part of it. And also with Mexican citizens who come in who either have a passport or they have an ID card, if they say they're coming in as a tourist, we let them in. And then the question is, do they overstay? And overstays would not in any way be affected by anything that the Trump administration has done in the last 3 months.
They wouldn't end up in any trouble.
Well, no, if they're eventually picked up as an overstay, they could have problems. But somebody who's an overstay, it would have a much, much more difficult time claiming asylum.
They'd just be kicked out. Or would they be prosecuted, maybe, right now?
No, because they would not have committed a crime, because they would not have illegally entered.
They just overstayed.
Yeah.
So President Trump did sign an executive order to stop the separation of families. Where do you see this playing out? Do you have any guess at what's going to happen here over the next few weeks? Do you think that this is going to come more of a head? President Trump was saying, I think tonight or tweeted, I know Roger was reporting in the news that these bills are being worked on. He said to forget about it, don't even bother with it right now. We'll deal with it after the elections, kind of saying that when the big red wave comes, that this is going to be a big issue. And, you know, once we get more control, we'll be able to pass what we want. Where do you think this is headed?
I am not nearly foolish enough to predict what Donald Trump is going to do.
Well, take Donald Trump out of it for a second. Immigration itself, between Republicans and Democrats, what would you like to see done? What do you think should be done to change this? Or do you think the system shouldn't be changed that much from what it was at?
I think that there are two important components to any comprehensive immigration reform. One is dealing with the status of the over 10 million out-of-status people already in the United States, many of whom have children who are United States citizens because they were born here. And the second thing is to come up with an actual implementable plan for how we're going to deal with people who are currently seeking to enter the United States. And you need to do both things, and doing both things would require compromise between Democrats and Republicans. There have been times we've been really close. If it were up to me, if I could basically pull back and put on the table the plan that was put forward by George W. Bush, I wouldn't love every piece of it, but that's pretty close to something that everybody could dislike just enough to hold their nose and agree to.
Well, it'd be interesting to see that actually happen. There's something being passed around on social media I'd wonder if you comment on. Has a little picture of Mexico with all these little asterisks on it, and it says there are 9 U.S. consulates and 1 U.S. embassy in Mexico where non-U.S. citizens can apply for asylum without any risk of being separated from their children. And then it says, instead, Democrats want to encourage dangerous illegal border crossings by turning children into get-out-of-jail-free cards. Can anybody seeking asylum go to one of those consulates or the embassy in Mexico and apply there?
If you could get an appointment at any one of those in the next 2 years, you're better than I am.
So while that's there, it's an impossibility to really actually make it happen.
It is basically an impossibility. They're not even, they've shut down the number of man hours that are available at the ports of entry. This is a deliberate decision to make it virtually impossible for people to seek asylum, either at consulates or at the embassy or at ports of entry.
Mitchell Eppner, former U.S. attorney, former assistant U.S. attorney. You can follow him.
Yeah, I don't get that promotion.
Well, maybe you will. You did really well tonight. I think you never know. What are you doing right now?
So I am an attorney in private practice at the law firm of Rottenberg Lippman Rich in New York City. I handle a large array of civil and criminal matters, especially federal prosecutions. And I'm also politically active and trying to bring people together to find solutions to these very large problems.
You can follow him at Mitchell Eppner on Twitter as well. I really appreciate you staying up with us. I hope we get to talk again.
I would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Congratulations on the new dig.
Hey, thank you very much. Come visit us sometime next time you're in Chicago.
Thank you.
All right, Mitchell Eppner. Follow him at Mitchell Eppner on Twitter.